Hello and welcome to the Three Inning Save podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Stevens here.
Hello.
It's been a week of baseball, but baseball is not the most important thing to talk about this week.
Yep. Took a back seat once again to all of us learning or getting refamiliarized with the intricacies of Major League Baseball's domestic violence policy for, you know, very disappointing reasons, obviously. And we'll get into it.
Yeah, like you said, it's again, and that the fact that it's isolated incidents are disappointing and heartbreaking, and sad, but the fact that it's again is just I don't have words. So yeah, let's we'll do a break and then we'll talk about it after this.
You ready?
Showtime
on May 3rd. Summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So, yeah, catch us up, Eric.
Okay, so we actually, I think, as you heard on our last podcast, we recorded last Sunday night, the day before Labor Day. And we put out an intro. I recorded an intro like at some point Monday, mid-morning or afternoon or something. That we sort of tacked on to the front of that, because just saying like, hey, just a FYI, Julio Urias was arrested on a felony domestic violence charge on late Sunday night. It was a bunch of people like in and around LA, like celebrities and otherwise, were at the I forgot what the stadium is called where LAFC soccer team plays. They were playing Inter Miami and Messi, so it was like one of the hottest like just areas to be around.
BMO Stadium, just to.
Oh, you know, okay, yeah. So that's in like Exposition Park area in Los Angeles, and in that area, late Sunday night, both LA Times and ESPN sort of reported the video part of this. A citizen took video of a man attacking a woman, then flagged down police. What they reported was that the video is in possession of law enforcement. Again, there's, in terms of specifics, like it seems clear that it was of, that's how Julio Urias got arrested. Obviously, you know, without knowing the full details and all that, but just know that's out there. And I would imagine at some point, obviously criminal investigation, MLB investigation are two different things and have two very different burdens of proof, like you don't need to be arrested or charged to be suspended under MLB's policy. But just throwing that out there, from a procedural standpoint, Urias was placed on administrative leave by Major League Baseball on Wednesday. So that removes him from the Dodgers 40-man roster. So there's been a couple, like, we'll go into it, but there's been a couple, like, improvements this year in terms of the public facing of this, both by the league, I think, and by the Dodgers. That the Dodgers have practice in this now is annoying and very troubling. But the policy calls for the MLB's commissioner's office can place someone on administrative leave for 7 days, and then they're allowed to ask the Players Association for like a 7-day extension. How that usually plays out in practice is that you keep asking for extensions, but then from an optic standpoint from the league, you get this weird sort of PR nightmare of every Friday they're like, hey, remember that guy we suspended and we don't want anyone to talk about? We just extended his administrative leave again, you know? So usually they sort of work something out. In this case, the commissioner's office and the Players Association agreed with, in the case of Urias, to place him on administrative leave, quote, until further notice. So doesn't sound like it's going to be one of those things where every 7 days we get like, oh, by the way, admin leave was extended. Now, I think part of that was Urias has a court date on September 27th in Los Angeles. So I'm sure that factored into it. But like, so speaking of that, so September 27th, you look at the timing, the last day of the regular season is October 1st. There were 24 games left in the season when Urias was placed on administrative leave. Factor in that Urias was already suspended under the Major League Baseball domestic violence policy for 20 games in 2019. There was an incident in a Beverly Hills parking lot. Police ended up not pressing charges, but under the conditions that Urias had to undergo a year of weekly domestic violence training, and that he'd not commit a crime in the next year, domestic violence crime in the next year. So he satisfied that, so he didn't get arrested then. But he got suspended 20 games. No player, the domestic violence policy has been around since 2015. No MLB player has been suspended twice. So you factor that in, however MLB, whenever they decide the punishment, you factor in that Urias is a free agent after the season. It's very clear that his time as a Dodger is done. It's not official, like, and the Dodgers can't really come out and say, like, you know, we're done with this guy. They're not going to do that. They're going to take the path of, like, least resistance, like, mm-hmm. at all times. They're just not going to take that kind of a stance. Part of it is they can't, like, under the policy, the commissioner's office can, mete out discipline. The team can't do anything. They can't release a player while under investigation. They can't, punish them, suspend them themselves. Like, it's just not possible under the system. Now, another sort of baby steps forward in this situation. The initial statement the Dodgers put out when Urias was placed on leave started with, quote, "The Dodgers take all allegations of the kind in this case very seriously, and we do not condone or excuse any acts of domestic violence." If you remember back 2 years ago in the Trevor Bauer situation, they did not mention anything of that nature, like, when they put out the initial statements. Now, again, this is the floor in terms of, like, expectations and actual, like, accountability and all this kind of stuff. But at least they took that kind of a stance, right? Like, they're at least out there to that extent. So, they, like, at least, because the way they handled the Bauer stuff, like, for, like, the joke, like, the flippant joke by Stan Kasten when they were in DC, like, the general, like, you don't know whether they're going to keep him or release him till, like, the last moment, they left doubt as to whether they gave a crap about, you know, like, having, like, a player with that sort of history on their team. And so at least saying this, like, it sort of sets a tone that they did not set previously. Again, baby steps. So another sort of way this was handled properly, I thought, was so he was arrested Monday or Saturday, late Sunday night into Monday. Dodgers were off Monday, but they were traveling to Miami for their road trip. They went to Miami and Washington, D.C. They did not take Julio Urias on the road trip. Now, this is not a situation, like, this isn't like the team punishing him, right? This was like a very common sense move. Like, we cannot have you here. You're going to deal with this while you're home. And so he was supposed to start Thursday. If you remember back again to the Bauer situation, he went with the team on a road trip to Washington, D.C. And before, in the few days before, he wasn't scheduled to start till like Sunday. So they had even more time in between. And so before MLB put him on administrative leave, they sort of also the one bad thing, they didn't have like Andrew Friedman or like I think Kasten talk, I think, in that right away. So basically Dave Roberts was the only public facing person, and he's like, well, our hands are tied. Yeah, he's gonna start Sunday. Like, he had to go through the charade. It was just distasteful. This time they avoided all that by just saying, look, Urias is not on the trip. So he was supposed to start Thursday in Miami. He did not. Again, so bare minimum here, they're doing this. But so I think, you know, again, path of least resistance. The Dodgers aren't going to do or say anything until it's resolved by MLB. But I think it's also very clear that he's done as a Dodger. Now, the next sort of small step, they also canceled a bobblehead on September 21st. It was going to be the Julio Urias WBC Mexico bobblehead. And they have removed that on the 21st. What did they call it? They're doing a giveaway of select classic bobbleheads or something like that. Mm-hmm. I forget what they said. But anyway, so that's out. So the first game back at Dodger Stadium is Monday. They play three games against the Padres. So you're going to look around the stadium. I guess it's one of those things you don't really notice until you don't. But there's like players' pictures on pillars on certain levels. There's sides of buildings. There's obviously merchandise in the gift shop. Like, all that is going to be gone. Someone posted a picture of the Centerfield Plaza. There was like a mural out there that had Urias on it that's covered up. Now, I don't know how they're going to exactly handle it. It's not like it was painted over or whatever, but like, that's going to be interesting. But like, also the little things, like, you don't really, I guess, notice is how sometimes they'll put like a sort of a stock like hype video or something. And in the case of this, like, what if, or, and maybe Sportsnet LA has already done this and I just haven't clocked it, but they'll be like, hey, remember when the Dodgers won the World Series? And then they show Julio Urias delivering the final pitch. Now, is that edited to the point where it's just, hey, Austin Barnes caught this random pitch? They probably, it should be, or whatever. But that, you're basically going to see that sort of level of passive decoupling, I guess, in this. So, but just the main thing, like, this all is just terrible. Like, it's awful. It's awful that anyone has to deal with this, like, to be attacked, to deal with, like, the fear or anything surrounding this, that Urias, like, got a second chance, right, after 2019. You would hope that, like the domestic violence policy, like, it's never really designed to, like, help the folks who need the help, right, like the victims and, mm-hmm. like, all that kind of stuff. But you would at least hope that there's actual growth from, like, players that go through it. And it's, like, at least on the surface, and that's the other thing we just don't know, it seemed like Urias had done that growth. Like, he participated in the police-mandated, like, training program. He went through the MLB system that there's, like, steps to go through with that, too. You would think they learn, but, like, they just don't. And then the other thing is, like, both of Urias' incidents, right, were in public. Like, so, like, and then your mind wonders, like, what's happening in private? And mm-hmm. it's, like, even more scary and just terrible. But, like, whatever goodwill Urias built up over the last 4 years, it's just gone. Like, it's gone. And, like, and he's basically gone too now. Who knows how long everything's going to take, but, like, that's where we're at.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine him getting any job pitching in the majors. I mean, we'll see. You know, there's no shortage of what capitalism in American sports can shock me.
Sure.
And bad taste, but at the same time.
I saw an interview with Jeff Passan on ESPN. He was basically saying, like, he said this, he kind of was, like, saying that same thing, like, this might be it, like, because it would be a second strike, right, you know, under the system. Like, it might be, like, super long suspension for one thing, but then, like, what major league team is going to, like, sign him? Now, Passan did mention in that, like, sort of video snippet, and again, this is just one small thing, but he was like, you know, nobody signed Trevor Bauer. Well, part of that was because nobody's going to sign Trevor Bauer now anyway, because, well, Bauer's not going to sign there because this year, like, the Dodgers are paying him his full salary, right? Minus the 50 games or whatever. But whatever was left at the end of his suspension. But, like, he went over to Japan because anything he got, I think it was like a $3 or $4 million deal, that doesn't count against the money he's getting from the Dodgers. So that's extra money. So, like, we don't know that an MLB team won't sign Trevor Bauer. That's the point, right? You can't just say, like, well, nobody signed Bauer. Well, you know, we'll see, right? Like, but you're right. Like, it's wild because this time last year was like, is Julio Urias going to get $250 million, like, in the, you know, in free agency? It's like, you never know with this stuff. Like, he was having, like, a down year. Anyway, his ERA is 4.60. I know ERA's, there's more to baseball than that, but, like, he was very up and down. He is going to be, it's going to be very difficult for a team this winter to sign him. Who knows what the suspension is going to be, but just everything about this sucks. It's terrible. And I wish we didn't have to, like, talk about this, as often as we do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to, like, there's no real good way to, like, transition from the Julio Urias situation to, like, sports, you know, like, actual, like, the frivolity of
right.
the sport. So we're just going to take a break, and then we'll come back with a new segment and talk about other stuff that is not directly related to Julio Urias, but kind of is, and we'll talk about that after the break.
Dodgers were on a road trip. I wasn't on a road trip, but I don't think I watched any baseball this week. I just had really busy work week, so you get a catch me up. I say that always, but a lot of times you're not actually catching me up. I actually know what happened. In this case, I know very little.
To be fair, I hope you didn't catch up. I hope you didn't follow to the point where you were following my Twitter religiously, because that will factor in the trivia question later. But or maybe you did and you know it because of that, and good kudos to you for passing my test. Now, like we mentioned, you know, the far less important part of the Julio Urias situation is what's left now of the Dodgers pitching staff, right? Like, however, the reality is his vacancy, like, is something the Dodgers have to deal with. He was very clearly going to be a playoff starter for them. But I want to bring us back to last week, which we already addressed this, but I want to go to the actual quote just because it's funny in hindsight. Like, so after last Sunday, September 3rd, against the Braves, Bobby Miller, first time he goes 7 innings, only allowed a run. He was great. This is what Dave Roberts had to say right after that game. He was, now, in fairness, this was sort of a leading question. It was like, how does this sort of affect Bobby Miller's, like, roll in October or whatever. Let's get into what Robert said here.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, what, 4 or 5 more starts, and we're continuing to gather information, but, you know, he's put himself right there in the front of the conversation as far as starting a playoff game, and he's earning it.
The funniest part about this to me is he's put himself right in the front of the conversation as far as starting a playoff game. And even at last week, we were like, duh, like, of course he's starting a playoff game. He should be the game one starter if we're being honest. And then, like, sort of jokingly, but like kind of not. And then this entire week has been one big monkey's paw, like closing one finger at a time very slowly, going, oh, you want Bobby Miller to be the number one starter? Let's assure that happens in the most destructive way possible. So obviously Urias is arrested on Monday. He's gone, for all intents and purposes. Clayton Kershaw still very much dealing with the left shoulder issues. On Tuesday, he pitched five innings in his 4 non-interrupted starts since coming off the injured list. He allowed 3 runs and 2 homers. Everyone was sort of looking at his fastball. It averaged 88.4 miles an hour, which is the second lowest of his career. But also he walked 5, so like everything was just kind of off. Kershaw, after the game, to reporters, I think there's a 2-minute clip that Sportsnet LA put out of like the scrum, the post-game scrum. I think Kershaw said, I feel fine 6 times in those two minutes. He was going to get an extra day to start Monday against the Padres. He's gotten at least 5 days rest before every start since returning, but that's kind of normal. They kind of do that with a lot of guys, right? Like they, especially now this time of year. But so after the Tuesday start, one of the things that Dave Roberts said, just to sort of say like Kershaw's fine, he did say he's going to keep going until he can't. Like it was a somber post game, man. Like just watching that video, but he also said they don't want to shut him down because they want to keep his arm fresh because they still need him to pitch, and a layoff wouldn't help. So then, come Sunday, after the game in against the Nationals to close out the series, Dave Roberts said, "Oh, by the way, we're pushing Kershaw back to Friday in Seattle. We're calling Gavin Stone up to pitch Monday." Reporters all tweeted out, it was not in the video that I saw, but that Roberts insisted that it's not due to a physical issue. I don't believe him. I think it's somewhat related in some way, even if it's not directly. In fairness, Kershaw has been working with Mark Pryor on a tweak in his delivery they think will help his command. But it's very clear that something in his left shoulder is sort of limiting him in some capacity. So even if nobody feels in like revealing just how much, right? So that's something to sort of just monitor. The other thing is Lance Lynn in his last 2 starts has gotten absolutely bombed. He gave up 8 runs and 3 home runs on Wednesday in Miami. His previous start before that, he gave up 3 home runs and 7 runs. So on the year, he's up to 40 home runs, which leads the majors. It's the first pitcher to allow 40 home runs since Mike Leake in 2019. But Lynn did have a great quote after the start. This is from Bill Plunkett of the ORC Register. I think the other beat reporters tweeted this too. Lynn said, quote, "I mean, once you go over 30, who gives a shit?" which is kind of funny. And he sort of went on and, you know, talked about how, like, this is the worst like home run year of his life. It seems like every other pitch, like when he's going bad, it goes out. So, yeah, it's rough. It's rough out there, man. And with Bobby Miller, like the Dodgers are very clearly like grooming him for a larger role, whether that be like this October or like going forward. His last 6 starts, 4 times he's pitched into the 7th. He completed 7 innings the last 2 times. On Saturday against the Nationals, Roberts even let Miller face the lineup the 4th time through, like at least to start, to finish the 7th inning. But then the first 2 guys at the top of the order walk. Then he hung a slider for a home run. So Miller gave up 5 runs instead of 3. So it sort of spoiled what would have been an otherwise good start. But even Roberts, like after the game, talked about it as like a growing moment, putting him in tough spots, giving him sort of practice because they sort of can right now. So it's very interesting. Like they're very clearly like you could see what they're thinking with him. Oh God, this doesn't necessarily affect the playoffs, although it kind of does. I completely forgot in the notes how crazy this week was. By the way, Walker Buehler's not pitching this year. They decided after the one minor league rehab start with Oklahoma City that it wasn't feasible to try to get him to return for this year. They're just going to focus on 2024. They also there insist that it wasn't a setback. That is a lot more believable than the Kershaw situation, I think. But I think it was always aggressive. Back in May when Buehler was like, I want to start in the majors by September 1st, they're like, whoa, easy there, buddy. Like, no, obviously they're going to have him go – keep having him go through the rehab process, which he did to get to this point. He was going to be like a long shot to make the roster. He was – like we talked, it was more real because he now appeared in the game. He was going to build up. But it was going to be way too much to ask for him to, A, return to the majors – and then build up to be an actual playoff starter. Like you're always going to have like command issues your first few times back, and you're basically going to ask that to happen like in the playoffs. So there was always a level of uncertainty, and I just don't feel like they wanted to rush it. So I think they actually did like think that way in this case, right? So you know, however feasible you thought Buehler was pitching in the playoffs, it's just another option out the window. But now if you look at it, having him back like fully, at least in theory, in 2024, and then with a sort of more experienced Bobby Miller, like you can get excited about that regardless of who else is surrounding them in the rotation. Another person though who very much should be and will be is Ryan Pepiot. He's looked great in his four starts since returning. He started Thursday in Miami. Now, we talked about last week where they optioned him, and had he not returned by, I believe it was today when we're recording this, he might not accrue a full year of service time this year, but not since he was back because he replaced Julio Urias when he went on the restricted list. That's sort of treated as similar as an injured list since, so he'd come back within inside of 15 days. So he might get that full year after all this year because he's been so great. He started Thursday in Miami and just retired his first 20 batters. No big deal. Took a perfect game into the seventh, then gave up a single. It seems, and again, there's 3 weeks left in the season, so take this with whatever grain of salt you need. Playoff rotation in some order is Clayton Kershaw, Lance Lynn, Bobby Miller, Ryan Pepiot, I think. Now, who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks. Again, Gavin Stone's pitching Monday. Like he might figure it in some capacity, maybe not as a starter, but whatever. So Gavin Stone is allowed to come back inside of 15 days from his option because Ryan Yarbrough is going on paternity leave. His wife had a baby on Friday in Florida. He was there. He flew to Washington, D.C. on Saturday night to pitch Sunday. He started on Sunday, and then he's going to go back to his wife and baby now for a few days, going on paternity leave, and then he's going to join the Dodgers in Seattle next weekend. But that makes 7 Dodgers babies this year. There was a very good article by Scott Miller in the New York Times on Sunday that talked to a bunch of those Dodgers about their new babies and the logistics, and Muncy and Gratterall were same floor, same hospital when both of their babies were born. Like Gratterall's like, he's like, I looked at him, I was like, is that Muncy? It was really funny. Like, but there was also a great quote. So the Dodgers, their family road trip, like full family road trip, was the one after the All-Star break. So like New York, Baltimore, Texas, I believe, obviously fly to New York, train to Baltimore, and then fly to Texas. And there was another great quote by Gratterall in the piece where he's like, I don't have it in front of me, but he's like, I'm looking around. There's babies over here. Babies over here. It was beautiful. Just like, it was really good. It was a good piece. I'll link to it in the show notes. So now back to the sort of Kershaw situation. One of the things Roberts mentioned on Friday was part of the reason for pushing him back was to sort of reorder things. Now, if you look at how the rotation is set up, I believe that sets up an order of Kershaw, then Bobby Miller, then Lance Lynn, then Ryan Pepiot. And that kind of makes sense to me, like how they might line it up. But again, that's something for future us to worry about as we do a playoff preview. But there's still 3 weeks left in the season, so we don't need to worry about that. Which we can get onto other things. Now, you say you weren't paying attention. How much did you know about how crutches factored into this week? Did you know anything about that?
Mookie Betts.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, that, yeah, yeah. I was still following.
Semi.
But,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Dodgers like complete their series in Miami. They won like 10-0 on the last game.
Also, just real quick, you would think that on the East Coast trips that's good for me. No, Dodger base 9 p.m. Dodger baseball is perfect. My work is done usually by then. It's the first 2 hours are leisurely. I'm doing something else. I have it in the background, and then you know I kind of listen to that as the game ends, either as I'm walking my dog or going to bed. So these like middle of kids are supposed to be being put down, and I'm supposed to do a little bit of work. That added to an already busy week and why it didn't occur.
So the issue came up. The first person to see this, because they're in Miami, right? Isaac Azout, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but he's a Fish on First guy, another Fans First Sports Network podcast. He was out in Los Angeles a couple weeks back when the Marlins were playing the Dodgers. So he saw Mookie Betts like in the bowels of Lone Depot Park in Miami on crutches and tweeted as such. And everyone's looking around like, is anyone else reporting this? Like, what is happening? What's going on? and then within a few minutes later, the Dodgers beat reporters who were there got news like, they're saying it's a precaution, it's bone bruise. And then, but you're like, oh God, okay, this is bad, right? But then you look, he had fouled a ball off his left foot in the first inning and then played 7 more innings. He walked twice, he got hit by a pitch and singled, all with the bad foot. He played 7 innings in right field. He came out in a 10-0 game, which is like a normal sort of move. But there's worry at this point because he's on crutches. And then Dave Roberts, it's sort of funny that this happens a lot before like big news. This is how the Kershaw like more serious injury part broke, was before the Met series. He went on MLB Network Radio, Dave Roberts did, and sort of was like, oh, by the way, you know, Kershaw's going to be out a while. But this happened with Mookie Betts. He mentioned on radio that he had like a CT scan and they're waiting. And what came out was, he had a CT scan and MRI, and both came back negative, I guess. Or the way Roberts described it was clean. Didn't show anything bad. So they characterized it as a bone bruise. He was unlikely to play all weekend in Washington, D.C. The positive news is he came back and played on Sunday. So that was good. He played in right field. So doing that sort of running did not hinder him. So it's just something to watch, though, because that could have been bad. Freddie Freeman broke the Dodgers doubles record on Friday. I don't know if you saw this or maybe caught it in a highlight. He tied Johnny Frederick on Thursday in Miami, that 10-0 game. His double was like a line drive, like a low line drive, just over first base and like fair, and then squirted down the right field line. And then the ball attendant down the line was like, hey, here's this foul ball. And he grabs it and throws it into the stands. So that's a dead ball. Mookie Betts was on first in that situation. I'd like to think maybe the ball attendant knew about Mookie Betts' foot before anyone else did. And he simply relieved Betts from the pressure of having to run an extra 90 feet. And the umpires, upon reviewing this, decided that Mookie Betts would have scored easily from first on the play. So they awarded Betts to go home, and Freeman got an RBI out of it. But that was his 52nd double. 53rd double came Friday night. He ended up hitting a 54th double on Saturday. That's already tied for the 12th most in National League history. There's still 20 games left, so he could get 60. That hasn't been done since 1936 by anyone. The other thing I was going to note was, oh my God, the rain delays in Washington, D.C. So all three games were delayed by rain at some point.
Did the one getting delayed delay happen in the middle of an at-bat?
Today, Sunday did, yeah.
Yeah, so I actually checked. It was
a 2-2 count.
Yeah, so. I was like, okay, what's happening? Update delay. I was like, really? I finally have time to pay attention.
You're like, kick my feet up and time to watch some baseball. And so Friday night was in the seventh inning. I don't remember. That could have been minute bad. I don't think it was. But, like, anyway, it was in the middle of an inning. That was a 94-minute delay. Saturday, they delayed the start of the game. That was 4 hours and 10 minutes. So that was on Saturday, like, I was just – on Friday, I just kept it on Sportsnet LA, like, in the background because I was doing other stuff. And what we've seen, because the Dodgers have had it's now 9 of their last 23 open-air road games have been delayed by rain by some fashion. So what I've noticed is that means for Sportsnet LA, when they say we have weather programming now or whatever, it's always the same thing. First up, backstage Dodgers, Maury Wills. Next up, backstage Dodgers, Walker Buehler. Then next up, backstage Dodgers, Max Muncy. If it gets really long, you might get into the Vin Scully retrospective. And then I didn't watch any of the Saturday stuff because there was, like, college football on. So I was like, when the game comes on, I'll figure it out, right? Same. And then Sunday came in the fifth inning, as you mentioned, in the middle of an at-bat. Austin Barnes came back from the delay and got a sacrifice fly out of it, I will say. So that was 58 minutes. So it was, like, 6 hours, 42 minutes total delay. also the Saturday game that didn't start until, God, what was it? 8:15, I think. Yeah, 8:15 local. That game went into the 11th inning. It took over 3 hours. So that was a long night for the folks who were there. So there's been a lot of rain delays. So, and they're playing in Seattle next weekend. But now I say all that. Now the Dodgers. Current their magic number is 7. It should be 6 because they hold the tiebreaker over Arizona. So, like, all Dodgers have to do is tie Arizona to win the division. However, the Giants are looming just close enough to where they haven't been eliminated yet. So there's technically a possibility of a 3-way tie in which the Giants, like, go off, the Diamondbacks sort of go off, and the Dodgers completely collapse. And if they finish in a 3-way tie, the Giants would have a better record between games of all three teams. So there's still that very remote possibility of that happening. But in reality, the Dodgers are going to clinch fairly soon. It's 7. It's a small number. They could technically clinch when they are at home. They play the Padres for 3 games, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It is very unlikely because I believe they have to get 9 out of 9 scenarios go their way. They have to sweep the Padres. The Diamondbacks have to get swept by the Mets in New York, and the Giants would have to lose all 3 at home or in those 3 days to the Guardians. So not going to happen. But at some point relatively soon, they're probably going to clinch. But, yeah, that's me catching Jacob up on, Dodgers baseball.
Well, there you go. All right. And only a little bit left.
Yeah. 3 weeks, 20 games. And the weird thing is I'm taking my uncle is turning 80 in about a week and a half. And I'm taking that entire week off when the Dodgers are home. It's their last homestand of the regular season. So the last games I'm going to before the postseason are these 3 games against the Padres that I'm not going to see, like, a game in person until October 7th or whatever. But on Sunday, the Dodgers won 7-3, the 7th run. Was a Kike Hernandez double that scored Freddie Freeman. That gave them exactly, to this point, 800 runs scored this season. They are 2nd in the majors to the Braves. It's the fifth full season in a row. They've reached 800 runs. Before 2018, though, in their first 60 years in Los Angeles, they only scored 800 runs twice. Can you name either season?
There's only, you know, I have a limited subset of to name, so I got that going for me.
You have a roughly 1 in 30 chance.
Yeah, see, it's fine. We'll roll that dice die after this.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Before 2018, the Dodgers in their first 6 years scored 800 runs only twice.
Mm-hmm. I'll give you a hint. It's early and late. So the last one before 2018 was in the Jacob era.
Okay.
Entrenched in the Jacob era.
Man, this is going to be guessing for sure. I'm going to be even cuter. 2017.
Come on.
What?
I would have said six straight years if that was the case.
I don't. You have done sneakiness before.
I'm not a cartoon villain. I would not.
2000 and. God, those teen years, there were bad teams and good teams, and like me parsing out which one was which. 2009.
Earlier.
Oh, the clock game. Excellent. 2006.
That's the one.
Yeah. See, I knew it. I was
so
just teasing.
They scored 820 runs that year. That was, That Nomar at first base, Rafael Furcal, healthy and really good. Who would you say led the team in home runs, would you say, that year, 2006?
Jeff Kent.
Jeff Kent had 14 home runs. He only played 115 games. I don't remember what his injury was.
J.D. Drew.
J.D. Drew tied for the team lead with 20 home runs.
Who else was on that team?
I'll give you a hint. Part of the current Sportsnet LA roving cast.
It's not Jared Hairston, is it?
No.
About to say, goodness gracious, is it Nomar?
It's Nomar.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I ruled him out because you had mentioned him so quickly.
Last like really good year.
That year. That was the 4+1 year, right?
Yep. 20 for them, and then Jeff Kent was actually fourth with 14. Furcal was third with 15. There's not a lot of home, but that was so. Russell Martin, the rookie, he joined the famed 10-10 club that year. No, it was a good year. Do you want to take a stab at the first year? I will give you the hint there is it was in Dodger Stadium. So you can eliminate the Coliseum years.
74.
74 is actually a good guess. And I'm going to look up because they were a juggernaut type. So to tell you how good of a guess it was, they scored 798 runs.
That'd be like Jim Palmer never having a 200K strikeout.
Yeah,
I'm not bitter.
We both missed that like
on separate
month, 2 months apart or 3 months apart almost.
No, I'm tapping out. I'd just be guessing years at this point.
The first year of Dodger Stadium, 1962, 842 runs that year. It was crazy because almost immediately, like Dodger Stadium turned into like a crazy pitcher's park. You know, in that especially in the 60s, but that was the year. Maury Wills stole 104. Tommy Davis had 230 hits and drove into 153. Warren Mills, Maury Mills. That's what I said. Wow. Maury Wills. I've seen the backstage Dodgers so much, my brain is broken. He scored 130 that year. Yeah, so those were the only two LA years before this run of, like, you know, actually being good on offense. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's been nuts.
All right. It's time for...
Questions from Craig.
Starting off with trivia for you.
Uh-oh.
You ready? Oh, you know, before it first.
Nice.
Ah, yeah. Well, root beer action. Root beer zero. It's Oktoberfest season, but I already had a couple. There's two breweries in town here in Lawrence, Free State and Fields and Ivy, each make an excellent Oktoberfest, but I already had some, so root beer it is. Freddie Freeman has either set or is getting close to setting single-season L.A. Dodger records as a first baseman. So this week's trivia is about those great L.A. Dodger first basemen. Are you ready, Eric?
Sure.
Freddie Freeman has 18 stolen bases, which is one behind the most by an L.A. Dodger first baseman. Seven L.A. Dodger first basemen, including Freeman, have stolen at least 10 bases in a season. Can Eric name four of the other six?
So I was trying to think. I don't immediately know who the 19 Steeler is, but I my first instinct on this was to guess because he played first base more when he first came up, is Cody Bellinger.
It is not Cody Bellinger.
He's not one of the.
He is not one of the tens.
Well, this is fraud. So Eric Karros is one because he stole 15 one year.
He stole 15. Home. Correct.
Tried to steal home and failed. hilarious. Might be my favorite thing he ever did. No, he was great. I loved him. Wow. Okay. 10 steals at first. So. Oh, this is rough. Wes Parker.
Wes Parker had 13 in 1965.
Ugh. What about...
And 10 in 1967.
There's two. No, I'm just kidding. another guy who sort of went back and forth between first base and outfield. This is a stab, but I'm going to go with Ron Fairley.
No Ron Fairley.
Okay. This is only LA. Okay, it's only LA. So I will. So I don't even think this is going to be right, but just because he played so long, I want to say Steve Garvey.
With 19 steals in 1976. He also had an 11 in 75 and a 10 in 78.
Ugh. Wow. Okay, now it's just a matter of picking off other guys. Okay, I don't even think this is right either, but I'm going to take another stab. Franklin Stubbs.
With 11 in 1988.
Yeah. Thank God there was an 88 on there.
Two? Two more. Miss. Well, you have four. You got four.
Oh, I got four? Oh, yeah, give me the others. I'm tapped.
You missed James Loney, 10 in 2010. And
I was going to say James Loney.
And... a player you might not know, Eddie Murray, with 10 in 1991.
Well, I am ashamed. That's been our podcast. Thank you for listening for 11 years. Good day, sir.
Every double Freeman hits from this point on will increase his LA Dodger record of most doubles in a season. Four other first basemen have hit at least 40 doubles in a season. Can Eric name three of them in five tries?
I'm too busy committing seppuku or whatever it's called. God. I should have just said Eddie Murray to say Eddie Murray. Stupid. I was seeing so much red. I didn't even see the question. Okay, so doubles in a season, 40 doubles. Okay, so one is Wes Parker.
Yep, with 47 in 1970.
That's right. I confirm this. Okay. First, Garvey.
No,
did not get to 40.
38, okay. 37, 36, 35.
Well, he's dead to me. Okay, this makes it this is rougher. Just because it was the 90s and it's possible once, I think it may be one. I'm going to say Eric Karros.
40 in 1999.
Okay, that if I'm thinking right, I believe 95 and 99 were the 2 years he could and maybe should have made an All-Star team. He never made an All-Star team. Mm-hmm. So 40 doubles, first baseman.
So there's two more names you need to name one. You've got
three guesses or yeah.
One more guess.
One more. So I think he topped out at 38, but I'm going to say James Loney just in case.
41 in 2010. Well done. You're missing one name. Want to take a stab at it?
I'm going to say Eddie Murray.
Adrian Gonzalez.
I should have said Adrian Gonzalez. I knew. Yeah.
Freeman was within three of the highest total walks by an LA Dodger first baseman in 2002 when he drew 84 walks. This year, Freeman probably won't be that close. There are five other LA Dodgers besides Freeman who have at least 75 walks in a season. Can Eric name three of them in five tries?
This is first baseman only?
Correct.
Walks. I'm going to... nope. I don't have conviction in this, but I'm going to say Wes Parker.
Wes Parker only had 79. So
wait, that's right.
75. Yes, you're right. Sorry. Okay. I got run cutoff. I apologize. Yeah. Apologies. I had them cleared 80, and therefore I was looking
sure,
at 80.
Sure.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
You got one right.
The other thing is, like, I was, he was behind, I'm going to go Eric Karros.
No, that man did not walk. I'm sorry.
I figured, might have.
I'm going to see if I'll figure out what his high was. No, I'm curious.
Yeah, this is tough. First baseman walks.
His career high was 63.
63, okay. I'm not going to say Garvey because he didn't walk, and you could pull this in my face if I'm wrong. But I'm just trying to like think this through, and I'm... Oh, Greg Brock.
Nope.
I'm out then. Yeah.
I'm going to give you one more shot. No, you have one more shot. You only got two wrong. Steve Garvey's career high in walks is 50, by the way.
Yeah, okay, good. I feel better now. I'm getting good at the not right people. First baseman. I don't know why this is like.
You said right. Greg Brock, right?
I did.
Yeah, correct. Sorry. Jeez Louise. Oh. I apologize. 83. My goodness. Okay. You're doing better than 83 and 83. Yeah. Literally. Nice. Better than me reading. My goodness. Two names left.
Okay.
Three names? Three names left, but you only need to get two.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say no the whole time and then later during question five, go, oh, by the way.
Oh, God. Okay. So this is just riveting. I don't know why this is so difficult. What about Frank Howard?
No.
Okay.
Are you done?
Yeah.
So you missed Max Muncy with 83, yeah. Ron Fairley with 75.
God, I should have went back to Ron. No, and Eddie Murray.
And Eddie Murray with Eddie 7.
Wait, so he had 87? Was that in 1990 or 89?
89.
Yeah. I am a failure.
All right, I promise to actually, like, read the list this time and tell you when you're right correctly. Freeman is 2 total bases short of tying the leader of most total bases by an LA Dodger first baseman. That's interesting. 3 LA Dodger first basemen have combined for all of them 9 times a first baseman has had at least 300 total bases. Can Eric name those first basemen and guess the number of times those first basemen ended season with 300 or more?
Okay, so one is obviously Steve Garvey.
6 times. You were supposed to... God. All right, goodbye, everybody. We getting up.
We're killing it.
I'm taking my headphones off. I'm going home. Wait, this is the Bob Barker clip you sent me, isn't it?
we're both sitting on the stage going, I can't believe this happened. I was going to talk myself into that because he had like, I knew he had, I think it was either 5 or 6 200 hit seasons, and I was going to work my way to it. I don't know if I would have got to 6, to be honest. I might have said 5, might have said 6.
This is the worst quiz hosting I've done in a while.
but last year, Freddie Freeman is 1.
I'm not saying anything. Freddie Freeman's on the list, yes.
Oh, wait. So this year he's already at 54. Oh, so he's at this year, too. So he's at 2.
Correct.
So the other – then it's just a matter of, like, it's big home run. It's going to be Adrian Gonzalez, right?
No. 285 was his lead top.
Oh, he led the majors in RBI that year, that bit. So Karros didn't do the doubles. I think he topped out at 34 homers. He was never a high hit total guy. But you only need... No, you still need... So he's not going to do it. Wes Parker?
And Wes Parker's career high was 281.
All right. Oh, wait.
No, it's not Eddie Murray.
Okay, I was going to do the math. 184 hits, 26 home runs. Were,
290 was his lead.
That's 1990, obviously.
I'll remind you that Eric Karros had a year where he hit 40 doubles.
Did I say that in my thing or no?
Maybe
I got him. No, I got him, right? And maybe I.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, look, you were trying to do total math.
Both of our memories are okay. Okay, so his career high is, I think, 34 home runs. So he only needs. I'm not saying it's the same year, but let's bet. All right, I'm going to say Karros.
Karros, correct. 1999, when he hit the 40 doubles.
Oh, the 99. How many home runs did he have that year?
I'm looking. 34.
Yeah. Nice.
There you go. He hit 34 twice. So, whew, we got through that. My goodness.
A slog. not Craig's fault at all. We both were terrible.
3 Dodgers, Mookie Betts with 99, Max Muncy with 96, and Freddie Freeman with 91 have over 90 RBI. No LA Dodger team has ever had 3 players with 100 RBI.
Yet.
For the contest, name the number of Dodgers with 100 or more RBI. And for the tiebreaker, guess the total RBI for all 3 players currently is 286 for the win.
It's going to be 3. So I believe JD Martinez is at 80, by the way. He just came back off the injured list. So the 20 more games, it's a lot to ask. I think it's clearly going to be 3.
It's those three. Which means we have to do math.
What is it at? 286? Okay. So there's 20 games. and they're each going to have 33 RBIs in those 22. No, no, just kidding. So Freeman has to get at least 9 more than that. I have a number in mind, but
I'm doing my quick math real quick. I have my number. My number is 324.
That was my
number. Oh, sorry, God. Craig, okay. We're tied.
No, that's okay. No, you know what? I'll go. I'm going to be the hater. I'm going to go 323.
Okay.
That's hilarious. Okay.
The St. Louis Cardinals are heading for their first losing season since 2007. Aside from a return to 2022 form from both Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, what else do you think they need so they can contend again in 2024?
Pitchers who don't suck.
Yeah, I was about to say develop, yeah, like learn how to develop pitchers one way or the other.
Yeah, a lot of their philosophy the last few years was like, well, we don't really need strikeout pitchers because we have such a great defense. And they're like, oh, what if the defense isn't that good? And then, oh, crap, the pitchers aren't that good. And then, yeah, that's it. You know what? I think they should just keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, this is great.
It's fine, yeah. No, I don't know, yeah.
Will Smith's numbers have dropped off in the second half. Do you think he should rest more once the Dodgers clinch, or does he need to play to find his form?
I think he should rest more generally. Like,
agreed.
Even before they clinch. Like,
agreed.
So they played 20 games in the last 3 weeks. Part of that is they have a doubleheader in a six-day span in that final week. But he should actually get rest where he's been DHing a lot when he's not catching. I think they should essentially go 2 out of 3. He catches 2 out of every 3 games, roughly, go like the rest of the way. And on the days he doesn't catch, he's off. He's just off. You know, there's only 2 off days the rest of the year. So like, you probably have to go more than that. Like this week they play 6 games. It's 3 and then 3. So it's a perfect week to go, two games in the Padres series, 2 games in the Mariners series, and then have Will Smith be off in the other game. They play 7 the next week. So that could be a 4-3 week, maybe. And then maybe one of the 3 Barnes days, Smith is DH. You know, but I do think he should rest more. But yeah, his production has fallen now. I believe Roberts has said this. I don't remember if Smith has said much, but like, you know, doesn't feel like tired generally, and his workload isn't like outrageous. He's been catching or just playing a lot, but he just needs to hit, like, really, like that's. But it's hard to say if he's like worn. You know, it's because he's worn down. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case, but he definitely does need to hit.
Just in general, I get why, right? Austin Barnes was historically really, really bad for as long as he was, but he's picked up enough of a lead that, like, and I have no any research on this, but I think it's right. I feel like Will Smith has historically responded really well to, like, little extended breaks for one reason or another. So I don't think it's that he needs to play. Let the man hit. Or let the rest. Put together a snack mix, not Chex Mix, to munch on as we are getting ready into prime sports watching in the coming months. For me, honey roasted peanuts, plain M&Ms, dried cherries, and stick pretzels could be winner.
In the same mix?
Don't like snack mixes. I like things that go in snack mixes. I don't like them. The texture's never right to me. I don't like it. I'm not a fan.
I like Chex Mix at one time of the year, and that's Christmas, because it's more of a, because it was like a family tradition than anything. It's not like I want to be just gnawing on raw Chex, you know, like, or whatever. Like, that's a weird thing to do, but it's a nice combo sometimes. But I'll do like I'll occasionally grab a trail mix, you know, something with like peanuts and raisins. And then like, I, you know, there's some form of M&Ms in there, you know, that kind of a thing that works. Yeah, for me, like, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I'd much rather just eat like pretzels, right? Just by themselves.
Yeah, or like pretzels on one side, then salty, or and some M&Ms when I want the sweet.
You don't like the textual mix.
Yeah.
Now here's a combo. This is more of a movie theater thing, but if you have like popcorn and M&Ms, that's a good combo. Not necessarily to pour. It does work if you pour some M&Ms into your, you know, bowl of hot popcorn, like, because it kind of is a little bit of a textural thing, but like that's a decent combo. Like,
here's a great snack mix: Ruffles with a little bit of French onion dip on the side.
You know what the mix is dipping it into the French onion dip or whatever. I agree with you. I had a good snack mix today. I put together a sort of combination of some tortilla chips and some serrano peppers and some cheese.
Wow,
and then some salsa.
Great. Delicious.
And then I put it in the oven to make sure, just sort of sure it melded all together. And it was wonderful. I call it my nacho snack mix, and it was a nice little refresher on a Sunday. So,
well, yeah, everyone go out, get some French onion dip.
That's right. Get your pretzel and mustard snack mix, as we'll call it from now on. I do like dipping pretzels in mustard. That's good. Not just like the hot pretzels, like the actual bag of pretzels.
I get it. I haven't done that, but yeah, I mean, mustard's great. Pretzels are great.
Well,
what a good mix.
While you're listening to this, re-listen to it and just hear how terribly I biffed all those questions. Listen to Jacob having trouble reading the answers sometimes.
Both telling you were wrong on right answers and then giving you the right answers.
We call that the snack mix of trivia. That's what we did. My metaphors are way off. Anyway, that's it for us. We'll have more to talk about next week. The Dodgers might clinch by then. The Dodgers might be down to one starting pitcher for October by then. Who knows? We'll talk about it next week. But thank you for listening. We are the 3-Inning Save Podcast. I'm Eric Steven. That's Jacob Birch. We are produced by Brian Salvatore. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.